we saw in the bubble. So there's a very, very small part of you that it's not even vindication. It's like, all right, well, I guess it wasn't just an outright disaster all on the Bucks, that this Heat team really had something, but that's very minimal.
No, it's a huge part of it. When the Packers got hot in 2010, I knew friends who were fans of the Chicago Bears, the Atlanta Falcons, that ultimately, even when the Bears, or when the Packers went on and won the Super Bowl, Bears fans aren't, of course, they're not happy their team lost. Of course, they're not happy that they lost to the Packers of all teams. But there was a little bit in them that was like, at least it was the team that needed to win the final two games of the season, got in, and then you look back on it. I was listening to Joe and Amber last night on ESPN Radio. Good show, 6 to 8 p.m. And they were talking about teams of destiny over the last couple of decades. The Giants in 07. As a Packers fan, yeah, it's a devastating loss that they lost in overtime in that NFC Championship game. But the fact that the Giants then went and beat the undefeated Patriots the following week makes you feel better about it. When the Brewers lost to the Cardinals in 2011, when it felt like everything was stacked up for the Brewers to win a World Series, the Cardinals went on and won the World Series. It makes you feel better that those teams go on and win the whole thing, because at least you feel like you ran into a team of destiny. And that's what the Heat feel like right now. The way that they've combed through the Eastern Conference playoffs, and hopefully they get it done against the Celtics in one of these next two games, they're the team of destiny, and it makes you feel better that they beat everybody in the conference, including starting with the Bucks in round one.
Am I the only one that's surprised that Jesse has enough friends that he has an Atlanta Falcons fan friend
Kyle,
in his power rankings?
Yeah, Kyle. I was thinking about that as I was driving around listening to that show last. I was like, you know what? I wonder if Kyle, if he's still a Falcons fan. Reached out to him just to confirm that. Yep. Falcons fan.
Is he from the Atlanta area?
No. Central Illinois.
Michael Vick.
Just love Steve Bartkowski.
I think it was the color scheme, yeah.
So wait, so you think, by the way, a bold take to say that the Heat are a team of destiny after the last two games.
Yeah, the team of destiny is playing in the West. I think that's what's been the most apparent about this playoff so far.
No, that's not a team of destiny. That's a juggernaut is what the Nuggets are. They're the number one team. They're the best team in the West. They made it out. Like, that's a really, really good team. Teams of destiny are these teams that sneak in, like the Cardinals in that playoffs in 2011, St. Louis Cardinals, like the Packers in 2010.
Like the Packers in 2003 until 4th and 26.
Yes, those are teams of destiny. And that's what the Heat are. Like, they had to win the final play-in game just to be in the playoffs. And now they're hopefully going to get this done.
It's a little more complicated than that. Yes, that point is accurate. And they were 3 minutes away from being bounced from the tournament. That everybody thought the Heat would win that first play-in game. They'd play the Celtics. I wish that would have been the case in the first round. And they trail the Bulls after just getting embarrassed by the Hawks on their home floor in the first one. They trailed the Bulls with about 3 or 4 minutes left in the second play-in game for the 8th seed. So to that point, yeah, they snuck in. They finished with the 7th best record in the East. They had a lot of injuries throughout the year. And we always talk about man games lost. For most of the season, the Heat, the Cavs were two of the teams with the most man games lost to injury throughout the season. Bucks were there early. Magic had the most by far. But the Heat and the Cavaliers, in terms of playoff teams, had the most games lost to an injured player or players out of the lineup due to injury. So that was a big factor. And, you know, it's something we would talk about every time Miami came to town, that I think it's still, you get a little PTSD after the bubble. We thought there was a release there when you beat them and swept them 2 years ago in the first round. But I would talk about this a lot with Dave Kane, actually, who, to his credit, was the first to bring up, you know, I get what we see on paper here, that this team shouldn't be in the conversation with teams like the Bucks, with teams like the Celtics, even what the Cavs did early in the season. But how is this Heat team any different from what they were last year? They finished with the best record in the East. They were the one seed last year. They were a Jimmy Butler three-pointer away from playing in the finals last year. And the only loss was P.J. Tucker. So you've replaced P.J. Tucker with Kevin Love and Cody Martin. That's it. Like, this team, I think we slept on them all season long. And what this playoff run has shown you is the importance of being healthy in the postseason, because Kyle Lowry They took it very easy with him and kind of worked him into the lineup. And the team that is the most healthiest is going to be the team that is the deadliest, and that's what we've seen with Miami. They were basically the lion in sheep's clothing all season.
Are you surprised they've had the success they've had without Tyler Hero, or is that not surprising to you?
I'm surprised the offense has done what it has without Tyler Hero. I am not surprised at their defensive connectivity. I think that's, you know, obviously the biggest knock on Tyler Hero. And if they do advance to the finals, that's going to be an interesting conversation of, well, this works without him. When we basically have Kevin Love, depending on the matchup, like that's the guy you would target defensively. If we work Tyler Hero back in against a great offense in the Denver Nuggets, that gives us somebody that the opponent can attack. Hasn't been the case with him out there, that you've had more two-way players that have been playing. You miss a lot offensively, but you know what offsets that? It's when you're shooting at a record clip from three throughout the postseason. So they haven't really needed Tyler Hero shooting.
So we had you on during the first-round playoff series, and I expressed to you then that the matchup made me nervous. I'm not an expert, that's why we have you on, but it made me nervous. And then it played out the way it did, and obviously the injury to Giannis was some measure of a factor, whatever percentage you'd like to say it was. It wasn't zero, right? It was something that factored in to some degree. It leads to Coach Mike Budenholzer being fired. We want to talk about that during our time with you, but I have a confession to make first to Jesse. Jesse, how many days without Becca are you on now?
Today is, I believe, day 11 of 18. Yep. Double check it. I'm actually keeping notes each day so I can recap the experience.
Has she misses you at any level compared to how much you miss her?
Yes. So we were able to text yesterday. She didn't know her phone doesn't work when she's in Canada. So when she's not connected to the internet. So it's been multiple days that they've been camping and adventuring and all this stuff. I have gone totally blank on even hearing from her. So yesterday was the first day in a few days that worked out. But then she's going to go off the grid again here pretty soon. But yeah, today is day 11. 11 of 18. Long stretch here.
So Paula and the girls are packing up right now, and they are headed to Chicago to spend the weekend with their Auntie Vicky. Paula's taking them down there. She's going to stay and spend some time with her. Vicky's not technically her sister, but she's a sister-like character. They're going to be gone between 48 and 60 hours, depending upon when they decide to come back on Sunday. And I am eager to get a lot of things done around here, because on my to-do list, there are always many things that I don't get to because other people ask me to do other things. But I'm a little worried that I'm going to get... You know, the universe is going to come back on me because I've teased you about how much you miss your sweetie pie. And I don't have to go 18 days.
Yeah.
I could not. Oh,
isn't Jesse
a
man? He needs Becca. He needs his Becca around. That's what they're tweeting in.
Yeah, I'm not. I didn't call you. I didn't say you weren't a man. I mean, there's other reasons that I question your masculinity, but that's not one of them. You miss your wife.
Packer fan 107983 said that to me, and I'm not very happy about it.
Sounds like a Russian bot to me. So, I'm just curious, have you generated any tips that you would have in your 11 days without her? For me, I've still got two dogs, six cats, a hamster, and some fish to take care of, so I'm not completely alone like you've been. But do you have one good tip for me to get me through these next 48-plus hours?
Household projects and load up on getting together with friends. How are you going to do on that?
Household projects, not a problem. Getting together with friends. I was thinking maybe if I get most of my chores done, I could finally watch Air so we could all
talk
about it.
That's good, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's basically my entertainment goal.
I
the rest
on
of it.
Wednesday. Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to go out drinking with Matt Schneidman.
Yeah, you Schneidman, and Domofsky.
Street.
You all got a 3-day weekend here. You, Schneidman, and Domofsky. Saturday night, get out somewhere and just shut the place down.
So I think 844-770-3776 is the talk and text line. You don't need to call, but I would love your texts on I got like a 48-plus hour window. I got a lot that I want to accomplish. So let me be clear. This is not some sort of vacation from Paula and the girls. But if I'm going to do one fun thing when I'm not getting stuff done, what would you recommend? 844-770-3776. You can also tweet that in on the Wildy and Tausch Twitter feed. Justin, do you have a suggestion before we go to break?
I got a couple for
break
the
down some WWE
well,
film.
Yeah, I was going to say, so there's three premium live events this weekend. So is that three separate things, or is that just one thing?
We're going to get into this later, because I consider you a good friend. I think of you very highly, and I also like Gabe Neitzel a ton. But I caught a little bit of Good Karma Wrestling last night on YouTube, and I'm not sure how two people I like as much as I do talk about wrestling like it's not performance art, or what did you call it, sports entertainment?
Yeah.
Like, he's talking about how you can't CM Punk, you can't be throwing chairs at people.
Well, you can't.
Well,
it's illegal.
The script says you're supposed to.
No. I mean, we could spend 3 hours alone on the CM Punk incident he's referring to. It blowing
Whoa,
up.
Nelly!
Thank you, Jesse. All right, we'll come up with some things for me to do for fun, but that your first suggestion is a non-starter. Our show has started with one of our favorite Cousin Subs. It's been too long, frankly. We've had some people that are, you know, pretty big stars, right? We've had Brian Bulaga, we've had Joe Thomas, but we haven't had our Bucks buddy in a while. We've got him here today, and I want his thoughts on the Bucks coaching search. I don't think he's on the committee that's conducting the interviews, as far as I know, so he's not giving away any inside information, but we'll get Justin's thoughts on the Bucks coaching search next. It's Wildy and Tausch. As Jesse is aware, although I wouldn't call it what he did, I did say goodbye to my sweetie. Paula and the girls are headed to Chicago, so you can keep those. I just want to do one fun thing and not watch wrestling. As much as I would enjoy quality time with Justin Garcia, that doesn't strike me as quality. So, 844-770-3776 is the text line for your suggestions. Jesse is curating those as we speak. Justin, we have not talked to you since the immediate aftermath of Coach Bud's firing. I have talked to you privately because I thought I liked the idea of Monty Williams. And I had an inkling that maybe Giannis also would like the idea of Monty Williams. But according to the reporting from Adrian Wojnarowski, Monty Williams not in the mix anymore. And as many, many, many people posted to me on Twitter, questionable look to replace a guy who won an NBA title by beating the guy that they then replace him with. So I get that. Where do you stand as of now on the Bucks coaching search and the three names that have been reported to be atop the list?
So the Monty Williams thing, I start with that, and I've seen and heard the same things that you mentioned there of fans saying, well, I don't want the guy that Bud out coached in the finals, and then it becomes us kind of picking apart Bud's resume, which I hate. I think Bucks fans are going to learn Mike Budenholzer is an excellent coach and one of the best in the league. Now, was he elite at in-game decisions? No. You can probably count on one hand the number of coaches are. And Eric Spoelstra, I think, has proven year after year he's the best coach in the league. So to be compared against that, it's a tough grading curve, but that's where the Bucks are. That I think Bud ultimately became a victim of his own success here in what he built up and how he took the Bucks from basically a perennial 7 or 8 seed to a team that was every year a contender to win a championship. So I want to get that out there. And also, the lazy and tired crutch of, well, he got outcoached by Bud. Every single coach the Bucks played against that playoffs was outcoached by Bud. He outcoached Eric Spoelstra, the guy that we just sang the praises of. Bud outcoached him in the first round. He was the guy that said, look, here's how we're going to defend Jimmy Butler. Here's what we're going to do against Bam Adebayo. The Bucks swept them. He made the adjustments late in the series against the Brooklyn Nets. Now, if you want to say, well, Steve Nash has proven to be not a great coach and at least not ready for what he had, that's fair. He outcoached Nate McMillan when he didn't have Giannis and down or tied in that series. And then again, outcoached Monty Williams. So I think Bud is better than we tend to give him credit for initially. I am pleased to see that softened a bit. But that was my reaction when I heard a lot of the, well, he got outcoached by Bud. He's not the only coach that that's happened for. In terms of the three guys that are out there, the Nick Nurse thing to me, it's still, I'm not going to say startling, but it did raise eyebrows late in the season when you started to hear more and more of, I don't think Nick Nurse is going to be back in Toronto next season. And it, initially the reports or what you started to hear was that was a Nick Nurse choice. And it seemed like, hey, he wants to go to Houston. And he likes the idea of potentially getting the one pick and playing with these young guys. And then the Raptors just abruptly fired him. And make no mistake about it, it was a firing. It was not a mutual parting of the ways. And it should always raise eyebrows for anyone when the team or whatever profession this is, when the employer fires you and does not hold back saying, we don't think this guy was good and we didn't mesh with him personally. That should raise some eyebrows for a team that's built on culture and everything that the Bucks have built here. There's no denying Nick Nurse's defensive ability and his ability to make adjustments. But that, to me, is the biggest eyebrow raiser. And, well, what exactly would he be bringing here? It's not to say he's a bad guy. It's just interesting when the organization has no problem borderline trashing you on the way out. Adrian Griffin was an assistant of his and spent some time here in Milwaukee. I believe it was the last season in the NBA as a player and then transitioned to assistant coach. With Adrian Griffin, you don't really know what you're getting. And we've talked about this before as well. It's difficult whenever anybody asks me, and I'm sure our pal Eric Name would feel the same way, hey, who's the best assistant coach on the staff or in the league? It's tough to answer because, right, you know, this isn't the NFL where you know this guy's in charge of the cornerbacks. This guy calls the defensive plays. Unless you're at practice and see who's in charge of scouting that opponent, who's working on installing some of these packages, you don't know who does what. We know generally what their strength is, but you don't know exactly what they're working on. So I think that's the difficulty with Adrian Griffin and really assessing what he would bring. Kenny Atkinson, you have more of a sample on, and people can point to, well, one winning season, I think it was, in Brooklyn, and they made the playoffs once, and look at that record. It wasn't a good team. He had Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving that one year before they said, we want our own guy in here. So he did a good job, when you talk about culture, bringing that to Brooklyn, transforming that franchise, because he inherited a group that was just coming out of everything they had been through in terms of their cap situation and the assets that they traded. He did a good job of building that team up. And offense is the strength for Kenny Atkinson. I understand he hasn't coached deep into the playoffs. At this point, other than going to the retread, not a whole lot of guys have. So that's kind of the overall look at the three guys. The difficulty for the Bucks is, I heard Eric Name say this, and I agree, more often than not, I would much rather go with an assistant coach who's going to bring something unique, bring a different perspective, do something different than what we know. Doc Rivers is going to do this. Mike Budenholzer, this is going to be his system. This is how Eric Spoelstra operates, and Nick Nurse. With an assistant, you don't know. Maybe you're going to get the next Nick Nurse and see some innovation. The other guys on that list, the Monty Williams, the Doc Rivers, and even Kenny Atkinson, you kind of know what to expect. So I would usually side towards, well, maybe Adrian Griffin then. So we get something different and possibly innovative. The trouble is you're 2 years away from another decision from Giannis. And you have a group that, if we're being honest here, assuming you bring back Brooke Lopez and Chris Middleton, you probably, with this roster in its current state, you probably have a two-year window with that group. So can you afford to go through what Boston was going through earlier in this season, where it was, hey, they're off to a good start, you get to the playoffs, I don't know if Joe Mazzulla is really ready for this spot.
Right.
You can't really afford that. And it kind of goes against everything I typically believe in and say, well, you know, I think you do have to go with more of the known here. And if you just wanted to keep continuity, Kenny Atkinson would be the guy that would bring most of that because he spent a lot of time as an assistant for Bud. So that would basically be saying, we want to fix the offense. That's been the problem in the playoffs. Kenny Atkinson will do a good job of that. Kenny Atkinson has familiarity with aspects of this system and with Bud, so he can keep some of those same principles, and there'll be some comfort and familiarity with these players, but we're going to change it just enough. So I think that would be the selling point for Kenny Atkinson. And for Nick Nurse, it's, you know, this guy won a championship, won four straight games against us when we were up 2-0 in the finals, in the conference finals, and look what he did in the finals. I mean, that was his masterpiece, how he defended Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. It just comes down to, do you feel like you can take the risk and know enough about a guy? Maybe it's not Adrian Griffin. Those are the three names. But know enough about any assistant to say, I believe in this guy, and I've seen enough to know he can be a very good coach at the NBA level.
This is why we do things the way we do things on this show. Because if Tausch or I tried to deliver that kind of insight, you're not getting it, period. So thank you for your service. Last question for you on this before we get to a regular, typical show where you're, you know, telling me about wrestling and we're talking about other things. Is there a chance that there is someone else that is not on this list that Woj put out there that could come out of nowhere? If Boston loses this series, you know, I am partial to Brad Stevens. Is there any chance he would leave the front office and go back into coaching? Because there's a guy who I and again, you're the NBA guy, not me. I just really like Brad Stevens. That's what I'm basing that name on.
Yeah, a lot of people do. It doesn't sound like it based on what he said at the time that he stepped down 2 years ago. And even, you know, if you go back to the press conference that Brad Stevens and Wick Grosbeck had in, what, September, late August, when Ime Udoka
right.
was suspended. And that those were some of the first questions that came up to Brad Stevens of, hey, we're a couple of weeks away from the season. You guys are just in the finals. This is a competitive team that should be considered a favorite. Where do you go from here? Do you step down from the front office and take over as coach? And he made it clear, no, that is not going to happen. That is not in the plans here. So based on that and based on the way he worded it and everything he said about he was basically burned out and didn't have enough time for everything he wanted to do, time with his family, and just felt like he was wearing thin as an NBA head coach, it doesn't sound like Brad Stevens is interested in getting back into that. And he's proven to do a pretty good job in running the front office, too, in player personnel. So I think he's comfortable with where he's at. In terms of anybody outside of the three, you can't say no because, you know, we don't know what's going to change. What happens? We wouldn't have thought last year that Ime Udoka, and I understand there's a whole lot behind the scenes that we, frankly, still don't know.
Right.
And I see a lot of people passing judgment and saying, man, the Celtics really dropped the ball here and everything else of we don't know what happened. And it's just going off of hearsay. That, to me, is the most remarkable thing, that we've gotten so few details on everything. In this day and age of information and everything getting out there, all we know is Ime Udoka had an inappropriate relationship with someone in that organization, nothing else. So you wouldn't have thought, point being, he wouldn't be coaching the Celtics this season. Even this playoff run, look at the amount of coaches, good coaches, that have been fired. And you can say, well, you predicted it with Doc. You predicted it with Monty Williams after those two exits in the playoffs. Even some degree, Bud, when you lose in the first round of the playoffs.
Right.
Although the previous, what, six, five times that had happened, that a one seed lost, the coach was not fired. But you can't say with certainty, no, nobody else is going to enter the picture here, because who knows if Eric Spoelstra, I'm not predicting this to happen, but who knows if he says, you know what, I'm going to take a year or so off. I'm just going to step down and I'm going to move on and look for something else. Joe Mazzulla could be available. I'm not saying, hey, you should hire Joe Mazzulla, but if the Celtics fall short here and look bad in game six, they could move on from him as well. So It seems like that's the list for now. I've seen people say, hey, the decision could come any day now. I don't know if we're there yet, because what's the incentive right now? I mean, you obviously need somebody in place prior to the draft and free agency, but you might as well wait to see, does anything else pop up? We have a generational talent. We feel like we're a team that can win a championship. Let's make sure we look under every single stone here and every option is explored.
If you join this conversation late, be sure to check out Wisconsin On Demand, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Thanks to David and his team for supporting the show and for supporting Wisconsin On Demand. Gruber Law Offices, one call, that's all. Because all those times where we don't talk enough Bucks, we got one of the preeminent minds that come when it comes to the Bucks. I don't know about some of the other choices he makes in his life. That's a discussion for another day, including at sports entertainment. We'll talk about sports entertainment. We'll talk about Aaron Rodgers. He always provides entertainment. And we'll check in with a few of your suggestions for fun things I can do while the girls are gone. Next, it's Wilde and Tausch. Continuing with Justin Garcia, our cousin sub of the day. Cousin subs, we believe in better. Justin, do you miss Aaron Rodgers yet?
Well, it's right now, no, because we never really had him over the summer anyway. It wasn't until the fall. So I will once we get to September.
And Jordan Love has his ups and downs. But we have not talked about him in a while, which it kind of felt good, frankly. Like, yeah, it's great that, you know, he's in New York and it's a dream and everything else. Then he went on Adam Schein's Shine On Sports on Mad Dog Radio on Sirius XM. Jesse, have you listened to the entirety of this interview now?
I have not. Now, Tausch said he did yesterday. He was listening. I don't know if he was when he was going to the Dells, home from the Dells.
I thought you guys rode together, but you didn't. You went separately.
No, it's like we ride together for these road trips like maybe once a year. We burned up our one when we went down to AmFam Field a couple weeks ago. Maybe we'll get one more at some point this summer. But no, big fella likes to travel solo.
And if you have to stop and pee, he wouldn't let you stop. So that's a drawback to riding with old T. All right. So in this interview, among the things that Rodgers talks about with Adam Schein is how much it would mean for him and for the city of New York and for Jets fans, long-suffering Jets fans, to have him lead their team to a Super Bowl. Here is Aaron Rodgers talking about those expectations and hopes.
Last night I was watching a 30 for 30 on the 86 Mets.
Oh, yes!
Kevin Mitchell fan. I was always been Kevin Mitchell fan growing up. He was a Giant and had a big year in 1989 where he hit like 47 home runs and drove in 125. And that team of him and Will Clark and Robbie Thompson and Rick Russell and Candy Maldonado and Jose Uribe. I just loved that team, but I really loved Kevin Mitchell. And Kevin was on the 86 Mets. He was a rookie, and he had the second hit of the inning and actually scored the tying run on the wild pitch when Mookie Wilson was at bat. But the reason I'm telling the story is, the Mets fans, many Mets fans are Jets fans. Obviously, the Jets, used to be in Long Island and a ton of fans from that area. And you see just the reaction from the Mets fans was so incredible during that time, and many people don't know the entire story, but they were down 3-2 and came back in that last game and were able to pull it off, down two runs in extra innings in the 10th there on the Buckner error, which actually put them ahead to win the game 6-5, and then came back in the 7th and won the World Series. But just the reaction from the fans was so classic. And just you realize how special it would be to win a championship anywhere, obviously, but I think especially here in New York with the team that hasn't been in the playoffs in 12 years and obviously hasn't been back to the Super Bowl since Broadway Joe.
So here's why I wanted to do that today. Not because of how much it would mean to win it for New York. And he correctly points out 12. I mean, we say it all the time on this show. The Jets haven't been to the playoffs in as long as it's been since the Packers won the Super Bowl. So if you're a Packers fan, try to put yourself in a Jets fan's shoes and going 12 years without even making the playoffs. Longest streak in the four major sports actively right now. But here's why I found that to be entertaining. He just can't help himself. He's always got to show you how smart he is and what a great memory he has. I mean, I don't need the recap of the 86 Mets. I don't need the starting lineups for the San Francisco Giants, but he just can't help it. And he's, again, we did 4 years of radio. That is authentic. Like, his brain is a supercomputer. It's incredible. But he wanted to get a Rick Russell reference in there. Candy Maldonado, and then break down how Game 6 unfolded. He is one of a kind. He is definitely unique.
Though I'm glad you mentioned those names, because to me, that was the takeaway of, look, I know when somebody is trying to sell me something and BSing me here, and it was that. If you're going to mention those guys, where credit to Aaron Rodgers for knowing this is how you do it, you obviously don't mention the stars. You mention these beloved role players of course I remember this guy. I remember watching that team. And also, Aaron Rodgers and I are roughly the same age. I'm a couple years older than him. I barely remember Kevin Mitchell. I obviously know him. I barely remember Kevin Mitchell as a player. And Aaron Rodgers is younger than me. Like, you loved Kevin Mitchell. You were 5 years old when Kevin Mitchell was playing for the Giants.
I remember him catching a ball barehanded in the outfield.
Yeah.
That's what I remember. And that he was shaped kind of like me, with a lot more hand-eye coordination to hit home runs. Jesse, when you listened to that, did you think the same way Justin and I did?
Yeah. And it's the honeymoon phase. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. He's in the honeymoon phase. He's wooing everyone. The fans love him. Oh, look at the true New Yorker, Aaron Rodgers, looking at Jose Uribe and those 86 Mets. Wow, look at this guy. He's totally embracing the New York culture. In fairness, we do the same thing as Packers fans. When these draft picks come to town and Tucker Kraft is talking about Lambeau Land, and he's the guy that said that, right?
Yeah, going to Culver's. Uh-huh. Culver's, like, at every exit.
We love it, too. We eat it up. Every fan base does this. If you have a new player coming to town, especially somebody like him, you want to know that he's not just the rental that's there for a year or two to try and be your mode to win a championship. When CeCe Sabathia came to Milwaukee, it felt like he was a Milwaukee guy for 2 months, but boy, what a 2 months it was. Like, that's what you get when you get a guy like this in town, and he's playing the game right and spouting off about the 86 Mets. All the power to him. What a guy.
The difference is, though, and yes, I Jesse makes a good point there, but Tucker Kraft is also not saying, yeah, I actually reached out to Craig Culver, and I know he did this and this, and yeah, I saw his first business that he started was here. Like, he's not overly selling it. And in fairness, Aaron Rodgers, this is what a lot of people do in job interviews. If you're interviewing with, let's say, a retailer that's known for their bullseyes, hey, I've seen you guys do this, and I love it, and I shopped here as a kid, and I know our customers are also the same as Starbucks customers, that you're going to sell that stuff too. With Aaron Rodgers, you don't need to do it. That's the biggest difference.
The only question I have is, and look, I just try to be authentic. So when I say that I jumped on the mattresses at Steinhoffel's when my parents were shopping on the Layton Avenue store between 76th and 84th Streets, I really did do that. But I'm wondering, does this work on New Yorkers? Like, I'm not here to demean our good people of Wisconsin, right? But we do want people to like us. Right, we have a little bit of an inferiority complex. We were kind of talking about that with Rob Domofsky earlier this week when he was worried that the draft is going to be a colossal catastrophe in Green Bay, which I don't know if it's going to be a catastrophe, but I understand his reservations. But does this work on New Yorkers? Like, are they Are they hook, line, and sinkering this? Oh, he's watching the 30 for 30 on the Mets, and I didn't hear him reference Keith Hernandez because that would be too obvious. And like, does that work on them, or are they so starved to win after all this disappointment of being a Jets fan that he can basically say anything and they're going to eat it up until at least he starts playing? And if he doesn't play well, then they'll turn on him quickly.
That was my thought. Is does it work on New Yorkers? No. Like, if this was the Giants, if this was somebody joining the Yankees, all right, man, we get it. We've won enough without you. But the fact that it is the Jets, I think it's a lot like, look, I know this person isn't right for me, but I'm happy right now. So let's see if maybe this can turn around. And I think that's kind of where the Jets are at. Like, you don't really buy this, do you? No, no. But we have a quarterback now, so I'm willing to put up with it.
Well, I am eager to see when the honeymoon is over, because I was looking at their schedule the other day. We were talking about it on the sideline at practice. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, if things don't start well, that they could be like 2-5 out of the chute. I'm not saying that that's what the Jets will be, but that's not out of the realm of possibility. And no one's going to care about your Mookie Wilson references if they start 2-5. But again, they can also start 5-2, and Aaron Rodgers is going to be supremely motivated this season. It'll be interesting to see at what level he plays. All right, Jesse, I see that in the trivia category, there is a Golden Geese reference.
Yeah, that's
us. You guys are back. You found a new venue. Where are things at before we play?
Yeah, for those unfamiliar, last Tuesday was our last night in the nest. Our normal venue has eliminated Tuesday night trivia. Our league has been disbanded, so we are currently in search of a new venue on a new night, and so we tried our first new one last night. Drinks were great. There was no TV, so we didn't get to watch either the hockey game or the NBA game that we're
on. There was no TV?
Yeah, that was a big bummer. It was really cool. They had like an outside, like the garage door thing where the thing comes up, and it's like outside. So it was a very nice night.
Dazzling detail.
Great drinks. Good trivia guy. No TV's probably a game changer, especially on Thursdays. Like, we're going to need that Thursday night football game on wherever we go. So probably a no for this venue that we tried last night.
All right, but you did play.
We did. Did not do well.
Wow. Higher level of competition, or you just played poorly?
Well, you know, just like baseball with the new rules in play, you got to learn the new rules and the new system when you go to someone else's house. And we didn't game the system.
Sounds
the
right like a
way.
Lot of excuses. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
We will take caller number 8 in honor of Aaron Rodgers' new number in New York. Caller 8, 844-770-3776, 844-770-3776. The Golden Geese's new trivia last night. Are these questions you got right or wrong?
Both.
Oh, not a nice mix. Caller 8 right now. We'll play trivia next. It's Wilde and Tausch. Keep those suggestions coming in. Jesse will get to them shortly, 844-770-3776. Paul and the girls are gone to Chicago. What's the one thing I need to do for fun in between all the tasks that I've been assigned and that I have on my own to-do list? Time now to play a little trivia. It's a special day when Justin Garcia is our cousin sub of the day. It becomes even more special when we have a first time contestant. Let's welcome in Jeff in Elkhorn. Jeff, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning. Good. Thanks. How are you?
Are you a longtime listener and just a first time trivia contestant, or did you just discover what a great show this is when Justin's on it?
Nope. Longtime listener.
All right. We appreciate your loyalty to the show, buddy. Here we go. Question number one in questions from the Golden Geese's new trivia last night. Kind of a mouthful of a title. What is the nickname of the NHL franchise located in Dallas, Texas? Which, of course, Jesse could not watch any of that game because they didn't have a television at this new place. Are they the Stars, the Supernovas, or the Galaxy?
The Stars.
Jesse, how'd that game turn out?
Dallas won in overtime. Got home and saw the final goal in overtime. They survived. Kept it from a sweep. A
couple friends of the show on that roster, by the way.
Joey P with the game winner, yeah, Pavelski.
Yeah, and Suter as well. Question two, Justin Garcia.
All right, question two. Wisconsin has 72 counties. Which of these states has fewer total counties than Wisconsin?
What?
Georgia, Nebraska, or West Virginia?
West Virginia.
You were able to get that right because you thought that's not a very big state, right? That was your technique there?
Absolutely.
Well done. Yep. Jesse, was that really a question?
There was a form of that question. I didn't want to totally plagiarize, so it was a form of that question.
All right. Well, two for two. Let's get three for three here.
We really bombed that question, by the way. We were, Tyler and I, totally wrong.
So what was the? How was the question phrased in trivia?
There were four states that they provide. I don't want to give it away in case this is like a thing they do at other places, but there were four places. There were four states, and they said rank them in order from most counties to fewest counties, and we pretty much did it the exact opposite.
All right. First of all, I appreciate that you're very concerned about trivia being played at other locales that you might be giving away an answer. Secondly, let's get to question three. Jeff, which of these actors, who has proven he has the chops over the last few decades, was the voice actor for Thomas, the first mate to Captain John Smith in the 1995 animated Disney film Pocahontas? Was it Ryan Reynolds, Christian Bale, or Hugh Jackman?
Ryan Reynolds. I have no idea.
I knew this one. And unfortunately, it is not Ryan Reynolds. Although there are people that are usually on this panel who believe he has chops. The correct answer, of course, Christian Bale. Christian Bale in the 1995
chops.
Film. Yes.
Tausch would tell you.
Well, he'd also tell us that Ryan Reynolds has chops, so his judgment is flawed. All right. Jeff, you got two out of three. That means you got three of the four entries into our drawing a little bit later in the show. Great. Thanks for playing, buddy.
Thank you.
I love you guys.
I'm impressed he got West Virginia over Christian Bale. I would not have gotten that right. I would not have been smart enough to eliminate those larger states.
The Christian Bale one is one of my favorite Disney nuggets. Whenever I'll throw around Disney trivia now and then. Christian Bale as the first mate in Pocahontas is one that nobody ever knows that.
And that was actually a question last night?
Yes. There was a whole thing about, like, match the voice actor to the role. And I turned to Tyler and said, I hope Christian Bale's one of them. And boom, there he was. I laughed out loud. Like, oh, my God, can't believe it. Know this one.
Well, at least you got one right. All right, that's it for trivia. We will kick off the 10 o'clock hour in 2 minutes, which will include some baseball and some renovation discussion. It's Wilde and Tausch.